Christmas. Yes, I smoke shit straight off the roach clip. I wrote shit for the blunt that wants to approach it. Forward motion, make us sway like the ocean. The herb is more than just a powerful potion. What's that commotion? Yo, I'm not joking around. People learning about what they smoke in my oven's on high when I roast the quail. Tell Bill Clinton to go and inhale. Exhale, now you feel the funk of the time when I feel the effects. I want to get high.
In 1975, I was listening to CKDH radio when the announcer came on with a report of THC from the marijuana and or hemp plant in cancer cells. 3 years previously, in 1972, I had watched my 25-year-old cousin die a horrible death from cancer. So when I heard this report, it certainly caught my attention. But time goes by, and I never heard any more reports, so I assumed that the report I had heard could not be true, or the system would be using THC to cure cancer. In 1997, I received a serious head injury at work. The doctors put me on prescription drugs, but these drugs did nothing to alleviate my condition, and many of the drugs had horrible side effects. In late 1998, I watched an episode of The Nature of Things entitled Reefer Madness 2. Dr. David Suzuki interviewed many people with serious medical conditions who had been using hemp as a treatment. The results were amazing. After seeing this program, I purchased some hemp and tried it. Just smoking hemp did more for my medical condition than all those pills the doctors were giving me, and I told them so. I asked many doctors for a prescription for hemp, but was refused. All the doctors would do is tell me that hemp was bad for the lungs and to stay away from hemp. It's still under study. Even my family doctor said it was bad for the lungs. So I asked him what he thought about me taking the essential oil from the hemp plant and ingesting it orally as a medication. The doctor agreed that this would be a much more medicinal way to use this drug, but would still not give me a prescription so I could acquire this drug legally. 2001, my family doctor informed me that there was nothing more they could do. They had nothing left to try on me, so I was on my own. I continued producing and taking hemp oil as my only medication. Slowly, my thinking processes cleared from the effects of all those chemical drugs the doctors had given me, and everyone around me saw the improvement in my condition. The oil had worked wonders for me. In late 2002, my family doctor examined three areas on my skin which he presumed to be skin cancer. One was close to my right eye, another on my left cheek, and another on my chest. January 2003, the cancer close to my right eye was surgically removed, and they were going to schedule me to have the other two cancers removed at a later date. About a week after the surgery by my eye, the area was infected and very angry looking. I was examining where the surgery had been done when the report I had heard on the radio in 1975 popped back into my mind. I knew the oil I produced had concentrated THC in it. So I put some oil on two bandages and applied them to the other two areas of skin cancer. In 4 days, both cancers were gone. Needless to say, I was very excited about the hemp oil curing my skin cancer, so I went to my doctor's office for a copy of my pathology report, which stated that I had basal cell carcinoma. I informed the receptionist that the cancer had returned and that I had cured it and the other two cancers with hemp oil. The reaction of the receptionist mystified me. She went rigid, saying, "The doctor will not go there. The doctor will not prescribe this." I was standing in my doctor's office telling them that I cured my cancer with hemp oil. They didn't want to hear it? Foolishly, at the time, I thought the system wanted a cure for cancer. Seeing the receptionist's reaction to the hemp oil left me feeling very uneasy. It felt like the Twilight Zone.
Good morning, CKLN listeners. It is 4:20, the 20th day of April 2010. You are listening to CKLN Rude Awakening with your host BK for a pleasant Tuesday morning here on 4:20. For those of you out there who don't know what 4:20 is, 4:20 is a day celebrated by people worldwide who want marijuana freedom, freedom to use marijuana, to ingest it for medicinal purposes, to smoke it for medicinal purposes, or just for fun. And so here at 10 after 6 in the morning, it is my privilege as your host, BK, a.k.a. Black Krishna, here on Tuesday, the 20th of April, 2010, to be the first, among the first anyway, to wish you a happy 420 today for not only the reasons of the people who want to use marijuana or ingest marijuana or whatever, but because this is a basic issue of fundamental freedoms. And once a group of people can be denied their own fundamental freedom like this, then you might lose one of yours sooner or later. So I do keep that in mind. You are listening to CKLN Rude Awakening, morning news show here on CKLN 88.1 FM, CKLN.fm online, Rogers Cable Box 947. You can stream the shows after I post them around 8-ish or so at radio4all.net, radio4all.net, archive.org, Podomatic, or go to blackkrishna.blogspot.com. To reach yours truly, do email blackkrishna, B-L-A-C-K-K-R-I-S-H-N-A, at gmail.com with any questions, answers, or suggestions. Trying to figure out a way to take calls and incorporate that into the show. It's a little tough, and there weren't any phone lines before, and so, you know, people can think what they want, but basically we've just been getting back up to speed, and so apologize for that, but now we're getting grooving here. And here on this 420 day, if you are a listener to CKLN Radio and you happen to be listening to this show or listening to the rebroadcast of the show, there is something that I would very much like you to know, and that is the conspiracy culture 420 movie night. There are these taking place across North America and possibly the world. I heard Kevin Booth, a filmmaker, discuss this on the Alex Jones radio show, but I'm at conspiracyculture.com. And there's a beautiful JPEG banner on the front page, so I click on that, and it says here, Tuesday, April 20th, 2010, Conspiracy Culture and the Toronto Global Marijuana March, a.k.a. the Toronto Global Freedom Festival, present 420 Movie Night in association with TFF, iWeekly, and High Times. Kevin Booth's a filmmaker from Austin, Texas. His films American Drug War and How Weed Won the West are playing at the Review Cinema at 400 Roncesvalles at 7 p.m. for American Drug War and 9:30 p.m. for How Weed Won the West, respectively. Tickets are $7 in advance at conspiracyculture.com or $10 at the door. And yeah, do definitely show out this. I'm going to give you a bit of the a breakdown here of what is being said about American Drug War. 35 years after President Nixon started the war on drugs, there are over 1 million nonviolent drug offenders living behind bars. The war on drugs has become the longest and most costly war in American history. The question has become, how much more can the country endure? Inspired by the death of four family members from, quote, legal drugs, Texas filmmaker Kevin Booth sets out to discover why the drug war has become such a big failure. 3.5 years in the making, the film follows gang members, former DE agents, CIA officers, narcotics officers, judges, politicians, prisoners, and celebrities. Most notably, the film befriends Freeway Ricky Ross, the man many accuse of starting the crack epidemic, who, after being arrested, discovered that his cocaine source had been working for the CIA. And on and on and on. So 4 years of production here, sold out test screenings in New York, Austin, and Los Angeles. It says here, the final version of American Drug War is, quote, the last white hope is locked and loaded and ready for the Toronto Massive. And that means you guys. That means the masses of people out there who are aware that we can't just use all the information for entertainment value. There's no there's no problem with being entertained by this stuff. And I'm entertained by the Jonesian films, and I'm entertained by all this crazy conspiracy because it's interesting. And if you have a chance to introduce that to a narrative, people will start to realize, if you can do it carefully, that the stuff you're bringing in into the game is more interesting than, hey, how's the weather? Hey, did you hear about this? Because we were all supposed to hear about it. Like, did you hear about Tiger Woods? You hear about Tiger Woods? Yeah. You know why? You know why I asked you that? Because I didn't think you had, even though everybody had. And these sort of forced, moronic conversations we're supposed to have. And so that was American Drug War. A little preview of that at 7 p.m. tonight. It is a double feature here, I believe. Oh, no, it's, there you go. I think it's individual tickets for each. Yeah, okay. So now on to How Weed Won the West, 9:30 p.m. The long-awaited sequel to American Drug War has been cut, cured, dried, and is now ready for your consumption. With California and the rest of the U.S. going bankrupt, one business is booming. How Weed Won the West is the story of the growing medical marijuana industry focusing on Los Angeles, with over 700 legal dispensaries doling out the buds. Following the story of Organica, a Southland dispensary which was raided by the state and federal agencies in August of 2009, the film shows that although much has changed with Obama in office, the drug war is nowhere near over. There you go. A little political shout out to the Obama files there. Frankly, you know, as someone who, I'm not exactly sure what I'm up to if I'm not trying to, you know, soften my approach to get people. But hey, maybe being hardcore at a time we need some hardcore stuff done, like ways to beat the New World Order thought of and executed. It's worth it. But yeah, that little shout out from Kevin Booth to Obama fans, you know, he'll try and nuance that, you know, but people sometimes need to get something to give you something. They need to get, I'm a good person, right? Yes. You are a good person. Now, can you watch this movie? Or I'm smart, right? Yes, you're smart. Now, can you check this out? You know, so we have to understand the tortured ways that we've been trained to communicate, with about a year and a half left till a potential 2012 government run by the New World Order, which at 6:17 in the morning, I do have to explain. So started off the show with I Want to Get High by Cypress Hill, segued into a clip from the movie Run from the Cure with Rick Simpson, a Nova Scotian who was curing his own cancer and many other illnesses out in Nova Scotia, and then flipped into of course, a little rant about today's 420 events. You can check out American Drug War and How Weed Won the West at 7 and 9:30 respectively by going to Conspiracy Culture and conspiracyculture.com. This is also the kickoff for a week of Freedom Fest events. And so the next week or so, Torontonians and people worldwide should certainly be focused on freedom. But what the hell's been happening? Why is weed still illegal? What's up with the justice system? What's up with, well, today, I thought it might be a good idea to indict our illegal system by looking at California's examples. This can be found worldwide in justice systems everywhere. But this is Richard Fine, and at first his advocate Leslie Dutton on the Alex Jones radio show from the 16th of April 2010 explained to you how he was railroaded, Richard Fine was, for exposing legal system corruption in California.
Leslie Dutton is a civic activist and former account executive and vice president of a national public government affairs firm. She represents diverse clients relating to the media, the U.S. Congress, and the California State Legislature. As a founding president of the American Association of Women, Ms. Dutton also spearheaded issue-oriented campaigns ranging from community charter amendments to the University of California tuition policies. As producer for the Full Disclosure Network, she has received the 2001 Emmy for Public Affairs Programming from the Academy of Television and Arts and Sciences. And we're very honored to have her with us. I mean, this case is like something out of Kafka or 1984, but it's happening in America. And we see this more and more. This is not the only case like this I've seen. She joins us now to break down, and it looks like we're going to have Mr. Fine on for 30 minutes or so in the last hour. So this will be a bifurcated or divided interview in this hour, and then coming up the next hour, we're going to try to talk from his jail cell, if he can get to the, get through on the phone, from his jail cell. Leslie Dutton, thank you so much for coming on with us.
You're welcome, Allie.
Okay, a lot of people aren't aware of this case. Recap the basics of what's going on and how outrageous this is and where this is going.
Well, it's outrageous because we don't hear about cases like this very often. The media keeps us in the dark. But Mr. Fine's case is unusual in the sense that he has drawn the line. He refused to obey a judge's illegal order, a judge who should have recused himself because he accepted illegal payments from a party in the case before him. That party was the L.A. County, and the county has been paying the judges here in the county for 25 years illegally. And there was a court case called Sturgeon versus the county of L.A. that the appellate court held that those payments were illegal because the judges work for the state. And the county is one of the biggest litigants in the county. So it is very hard to understand when Mr. Fine just tells us that by their own admission, the county has never lost a case except for three. The county's looking at this like risk management, paying off the judges, according to Mr. Fine. But what he did was, rather than obey the judge's illegal order, the judge ordered him to pay $47,000, which he didn't have, to the county to cover the cost of an EIR report. That's an environmental impact report on a development. So Mr. Fine is sitting in jail because he refuses to cave into the corruption. And I have to tell you, the Full Disclosure Network has been covering this since the day before he was arrested when we interviewed him. He knew what he was getting into, but he didn't realize how bad the situation was. And what he's done in all the courts that he has filed from his jail cell, his appeals, his writ of habeas corpus, his motions and so forth, is that he has documented everything that is happening. The courts, when they responded, they violated every rule. They ignored his rights and due process, and they covered for each other. And
we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about that in a moment. Fulldisclosure.net is the website if you want to find out more. Fulldisclosure.net. But again, you're a high caliber person. I mean, you're civically involved at the highest levels of the community and government. Yeah, you're an Emmy Award winner. So you've checked into this yourself. And Mr. Fine is no slouch either.
No, he has a PhD in international law. He was an antitrust prosecutor for the Department of Justice in Washington. But it was when his career became so successful as a consumer and taxpayer's advocate that he ran into trouble. And he had great success outside of L.A. County. But in L.A. County, he found, as he described it, the corruption was so bad that there wasn't a fair shake in the courts, and that the people are not getting a fair shake. And he had it. He just decided it was time to draw the line and clean up the corruption in the court.
Well, we've seen the case in Pennsylvania, and there's been other cases where it's admitted, and judges have now been indicted for getting, two judges, $2.6 million to take innocent kids and put them in a private juvenile lockup. And the company that ran that was secretly paying the judges to put innocent people in jail. So we know that Mr. Fine's case and this case in Pennsylvania and others are just the tip of the iceberg.
Well, you really put it very well, because since the Full Disclosure started covering this, we had no idea how bad it was. But it appears that the courts are the beneficiaries of many fees, and they gain money by the manner in which they handle the cases, whether it be child custody cases, whether it be environmental impact. But there is a monetary incentive for judges who benefit from the decisions they make. And there's no oversight, although the presiding judges should be checking. There should be a checks and balances, but it's certainly not working here. And since we started doing this, people have been coming out of the woodwork to share other horror stories. And Mr. Fine has dug his heels in and said it's time to clean it up.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, his phone calls to us are getting blocked somehow, but he's able to get through on a calling card. And this is a very important case of Richard Fine. Here's the headline. The U.S. Supreme Court will consider the case of a 70-year-old taxpayer advocate, Richard Fine, who has languished in jail for more than a year. This is an amazing story. He's a former federal antitrust lawyer, PhD. And it is admitted that judges in L.A. County are being paid money under the table, similar to the case MSNBC reports on. Two judges plead guilty in sending kids to lockup. Pair admit they got $2.6 million in payoffs to put away young people in a private facility. So this is going on everywhere, but no jury, no charges, over a year in jail because he's been exposing the very judge that put him in jail. Now, this is the essence of tyranny, what we see in the Declaration of Independence, what we were fighting against. Richard Fine, you've got the floor. Tell people what's happened to you.
Okay, well, what has happened to me, very simply, is that I exposed the scheme under which L.A. County supervisors have paid over $300 million.
Your call may be monitored or recorded.
In the last 23 years, to the L.A. County Superior Court judges. Now, the interesting thing about this is that the Superior Court judges are state-elected judges. They have absolutely no relationship to L.A. County. These judges are elected in state elections, they're state officials, and they're state employees. And what happened approximately 23 years ago in the late 1980s, the L.A. County supervisors decided that they were going to pay sitting judges money to attract and retain qualified judges to sit in L.A. County. Now, this is totally ridiculous because of the fact that you can't attract a sitting judge to become a judge, and you can't retain a sitting judge to become a judge because the judges are elected. So you can't give them money to attract them to have a job that they already have.
And courts,
to retain a job for which they're elected.
And precedent shows this is basically illegal, but they're doing it in plain view, right out in the open, and you have a conflict of interest now, where in all these years, the county's only lost three lawsuits because they pay the judges.
That's right. Now, interestingly enough, Alex, it wasn't out in the open. The way that they did it, is they did it through the budget process. And in the budget, there was an item called trial court funding. And they just plugged it into trial court funding, and there really was no way that the public really saw that this was money going to the judges. The only way you could find it is that you could find maybe a footnote that would say it was part of trial court funding that the money was.
Okay, so now it's out in the open, but the media isn't giving it a lot of attention. Now, $300 million, how much are these judges getting a piece a year?
The judges were getting, in 2007 and 2008, they were getting $46,366 per judge per year, and there are 430 judges in L.A. County.
On top of their state paycheck.
Yeah, their state paycheck was $178,000 a year, plus $30,000 in benefits. So the judges were basically taking home about $250,000 a year. That is more than the Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court, who only takes home $218,000 a year. Now, this is across the board, by the way, throughout California. 55 out of the 58 counties in California is paying extra money to the
judges. Your call may be monitored or recorded.
Not all of them are paying as much money as L.A. County, however. Some of them are only paying a few thousand dollars. In fact, in our latest report that came out this year, I think it's $33 million is being paid to judges throughout California. $23 million of it is being paid in L.A. County.
Unbelievable. And so you start exposing this. You start challenging cases where there's a major conflict of interest, and they throw you in jail, and they're not charging you, and you've been there for a year? I mean, are they saying you'll be there forever?
Well, they want to keep me here until I tell them what my assets are so that they can grab my assets based upon a ruling that this Judge Yaffe made that I should pay money to L.A. County. Because what happened in this particular case is, and this is also very interesting because this shows you how deep the corruption is. What happened in this case, and the case is called Marina Strand Colony 2.
Richard, we got a break. We got a break for the network and satellites. We're back in 3 minutes. Stay there. We hope they don't cut you off. And I've seen cases on CNN where the judges come out in Texas and admit they're getting the money from people's cars they take and wallets they take with no drugs or anything. It's just lawlessness. It's going on everywhere.
Back, CKLN listeners. That was, again, Richard Fine on the Alex Jones Show, preceded by Leslie Dutton, his advocate on the Alex Jones Radio Show, from the 16th of April 2010, talking about the corruption in the California legal system. And so if you wonder, you know, why, you know, America is a population that's 10% black and a prison population that's 50% black, it's not because blacks are fundamentally more, ingrained to commit crime. There's lots of sociological reasons, but a big part of it is plain old government corruption and the fact that corporations get to use prison labor as slave labor. And I played clips of Kevin Booth, the filmmaker behind American Drug War and How Weed Won the West, where he's talked about the same, where basically there are quotas, and if you decriminalized marijuana, you'd get rid of over 90% of the drug offenses out there. And since marijuana is a relatively harmless drug, it's something we should consider doing here on 420 and for the next week or so. Worth considering, not just because people want to get high, but because it's a matter of fundamental individual freedom. Another great Canadian patriot, part of the BC3 group of people targeted by the U.S. Justice Department, is Mark Emery. And he's basically said, yeah, the government should be able to control what you put in and out of your mouth. They shouldn't be able to control your exhalation of air, essentially, even if it's got a little bit of marijuana smoke in it. Another great movie by another great Canadian. A movie's called Grass, and it's narrated by Woody Harrelson. It's directed by Toronto filmmaker Ron Mann. Ron, M-A-N-N. And if you want to know why, you know, here, if you get knocked for some weed, if you're caught smoking or whatever, you might get it confiscated. You might get a small fine. So it's not quite that bad. But, you know, you've heard stories from overseas, and if you've traveled, and I've traveled, if you go to places like Thailand or China or whatever, you know, they'll throw you in jail for 5 years over one joint. And that seems a little bit insane, considering you weren't even coming close to harming anybody else, by choosing to indulge in that one joint. But the reason is that the United States actually, and there's a couple of key advocates for the criminalization of marijuana worldwide, but the guy that pushed it the most in the States eventually took it to the United Nations, and through international convention and international treaty, got countries worldwide to sign up to criminalizing a variety of drugs, including marijuana, and actually having policies that were tougher than the United States and other Western countries. So when you go to a country like India, you know, or China or Thailand, where they've used some variety of cannabis as part of their health rituals for hundreds, perhaps even thousands of years. And then all of a sudden you see these cultures kind of treating it like it's the worst thing ever. You know, you're like, well, you know better. Well, that's because of, quote unquote, the New World Order. The Anglo-American establishment, the colonial powers that stole from the world and then decided to figure out a new process for managing it in the 20th century in the quote-unquote post-colonial era by economically enslaving everybody. So everybody actually thinks that they're not enslaved anymore. They think this is just the way things are and countries need money. And if you want people to invest, you've got to lower the standards of living and lower the wages for your own people, or you won't get this magical, you know, godly money pot. But that is essentially, the money pot is controlled by the people that issue currency, fiat currency, and that is the central banks of the world, particularly the BIS.org, Bank of International Settlements in Basel, Switzerland, the United States Federal Reserve, the Central Bank of England. These are three of the main players in the financial schemes. They print money from nothing, out of thin air. They loan it to governments. And then those governments have to pay them back at interest. And as Paul Craig Roberts mentioned yesterday, if you are born into slavery, if you're born into debt, if you inherit the debt of your parents, then that is known as generational slavery by any traditional metric. So some thoughts to think about here when we should be pushing for freedom. And also we should be questioning, you know, all of our systems and the justice system in particular. As governments worldwide grow in size and use the excuse of fighting a war on terror and the need to look for external terrorist threats, internal foreign terrorist threats, and internal now domestic threats, as is increasingly being played up, it's important to question those ideas. Adolf Hitler, dictator of Germany, pre-World War II, he had the power of the law on his side because he changed the law. And so it's important to understand that an unjust law is not worth supporting and not worth believing in. And you'll have people out there making arguments all the time, oh, it hasn't been proven yet. How long does it take to prove it? And if you're not going to prove it scientifically, then how long does it take to realize a bunch of people are using it and nothing's happening to anyone else? There's also a difference between criminalization or decriminalization and legalization. Many of the people I know who argue about that particular issue suggest that decriminalization might be the best option because it would basically leave everything alone and allow it to sort of re-regulate. Just take the criminal element out of it, but still keep it black market and see if the black market would flourish in a situation where it was decriminalized. Legalization involves sort of LCBO rules on alcohol for marijuana, where the government would heavily tax it, you know, probably at least 50-60% taxes. Now, I know I bought a bottle of alcohol in Buffalo after dropping a friend off. I was working at a telecom firm, and I dropped a colleague of mine off in Buffalo to take a flight to Florida, where he, as a computer engineer, had to do some work. And I thought, oh, wicked, duty-free, I'll get some booze. And then on the way back, the guy was like, how long were you over in Buffalo? And I was like, ah, about an hour or so. Just dropped Buddy off at the airport. And the guy was like, ah, you got to be in the States at least 24 hours or something before you can, or maybe 48, before you can bring back anything duty-free. So you'll have to pay duty on that. And I was like, what? Ah, geez, it's a $25 bottle of alcohol that I paid you guys, you know, $18 for. You know, what's it going to cost? And he charged me $20 in taxes. So on a $25 bottle of booze here in Canada, $20 of that is pure taxes. And you can look at other estimates on other things like gas for our cars to see a substantial portion of that, over 50%, is taxes. So there are some issues with the legalization as opposed to decriminalization of marijuana. But again, those are arguments to have once you settle on the idea that as an issue of individual freedom, it's something that we should be behind. But then again, there are lots of ways to interpret freedom here in the early part of the 21st century in April 2010. And at RadioForAll.net, I did happen to stumble upon a few clips from the Feminist Porn Awards. And I'm going to play a little clip here of Allison Lee talking about the history of the Feminist Porn Awards. And in a nutshell, I am somebody who does criticize the control of feminism as an academic and activist discipline, and the control of pornography, and the lack of an awareness of the New World Order in the conversations they have. And because of that lack of awareness, I believe the New World Order seeds various cultures with bad ideas that get them to promote freedom that will only lead to chaos or destructiveness or their own enslavement. And part of that is the promotion of sex so widely. It is extremely powerful, and we all like it in this culture. And so it's important, especially to see how we're being sold it, and what is being sold to us with respect to freedom. Should freedom be our rights and freedoms, or should freedom be having all sorts of wacky sex? You decide.
They started 5 years ago by Good for Her, and it was in response to the fact that there is this growing body of mostly female filmmakers who are making incredible movies that were geared more towards women, that were presenting people not as these stereotypes or as objects, but as sexual beings, and nobody was recognizing them. What we wanted to do was to take a chance to sort of honor that, and also as a response to sort of the growing racism that we were seeing in pornography, the fact that we couldn't get movies in that featured people of color in a holistic way, that it was really reduced to stereotypes for the most part. And so we wanted to say that it can be done. There's a lot of filmmakers who doing this. Here's some of them. Here's people who are making great porn for all different kinds of people.
So you're saying in your program that these awards are to recognize the amazing filmmakers, you said, and performers who are making revolutionary smut that empowers women and marginalized communities. So I would like you to react to this, or to go further with the sentence and telling us, how do you recognize those in those films, this power to give power to women and to revolutionize things?
Well, I think that the awards as a whole mean that it's a massive celebration that is increasingly being recognized by the mainstream, just not just our awards and what we're doing, but the performers and the movies that we are honoring. So I think that having this event is what keeps people going. People get so excited by the fact that we're doing this because nobody else is recognizing these people. And increasingly people are starting to recognize them, but it's such a slow process. So I think that by saying that this is valuable, that we appreciate this, that there is an audience for this, what happens is that more and more people get to hear about it, more and more people know that this exists, more and more people know that they have a choice when it comes to porn. They don't have to watch the, like, cheese ball, fake orgasm people who are, you know, like, who are like sex robots. They're not even like human beings. Instead, we can present human sexuality as this whole piece that includes people who love being watched and includes people who love watching porn, and that it doesn't have to mean that you're not a feminist if you like watching porn, if you like watching sexual situations. And so just I think having this award, this awards becomes this gathering, this focal point for this really larger sex positive community that we want to be fostering, that we want to say that you can do this too, and that, you know, sexual desire is this huge myriad of things. There's so many different ways to experience sexual desire, and that the people who are capturing this on film are brave, are sexy, and we love them so much. The basic criteria that we fit, that we use for the awards, are that it has to have at least one of the following, and you know, it can be more. So the first one is that a woman had a hand in the production, either the direction or writing or producing of the movie. The second is that it depicts genuine female pleasure. And the third one is that it expands the boundaries of sexual expression on film. The unofficial fourth one is, of course, it has to be hot. So you could have a woman directing a very terribly boring movie that it was all about, like, very marginalized sexuality, but if it's not, you know, like, you can do that and still not have it be very exciting. So still has to be hot. That's sort of our basic criteria. Beyond that, what we're looking for is we also look at things like quality, like how are people working with what they've got. A lot of feminist porn is done on a very small, tight budget, but how are people able to work with that? And how are they able to capture chemistry between people, connection between people? And how are they showing people as whole sexual beings? I think those are sort of other things that we look at as well. For the screenings, our criteria are really different. Personally, when I'm putting together screenings, and we've done a lot more this year, we've done sort of fundraising screenings throughout the year, sort of organized around themes and things like that. One of the things that's really important to me is challenging the audience about what they think feminist porn looks like. So, for example, last night we showed a lot of pretty different stuff, I think, and, you know, one of them was an educational movie about male sexuality primarily, right, with Tristan Taramino's Expert Guide to Anal Pleasure for Men, and I think what that...
What's happening, sweetheart?
High as a motherfucker.
I got some cool shit planned, baby. Just pack your bag, just throw whatever. Really, you don't need to pack a bag. I'm gonna take care of that when we get there.
And we're back, CKLN listeners. That was, again, Allison Lee talking about the history of the Feminist Porn Awards. And you can see that that a lot of these groups are not based on fighting for traditional rights. And rights are rights to be protected against other people in society, and especially against the government and government control or regulation of what you're up to. And you'll see that in this culture where the government cracks down on a lot of things, they are suspiciously slack about pornography, and you have to wonder why. And, well, in a nutshell, I break this down periodically, regularly, because especially here in the city of Toronto, we are indoctrinated heavily into a sexy culture, and we are indoctrinated heavily into re-indoctrinating each other by dressing provocatively, acting provocatively, and speaking in ways that say, we're cool, oh yeah, you know. And this has been going on for 30, 40 years. You know, every culture thinks that they're being sexually liberated, but if you look back throughout history, you can see that, well, first of all, there's always been, quote, sexual liberation, which has extended to depravity. You know, there's tales of Sodom and Gomorrah in the Bible, and then numerous others throughout history of the Greeks and the Romans and other cultures worldwide. And at the highest levels of all cultures, where people are power mad, they tend to be sexually depraved. You had le droit de seigneur, the right of first night, where a nobleman, you know, if a couple, a serf couple or a slave couple were being married on their property, he had the right to have sex with the bride on her first night and take her virginity, before the husband did. And that's the kind of wacky stuff they're into. So, because there's this New World Order system running the world, what do they want to do? Well, they want total control. They want a world government, a scientific dictatorship to control the entire world. How are they going to do that? How can a handful of people, using a metaphorically compartmentalized pyramid structure, take over the entire world? Okay, no problem. First of all, control the money. We all need it. Boom. Second of all, control of our minds. So we actually push for our own enslavement. And what the powers that be evil have found is that by engineering a culture where you know, sexual predators and socialist editors, we can never learn to say anything to get betterer. Because what we end up doing is we end up being very nihilistic, very narcissistic. We're all about ourselves. We're all about how, you know, what's happening to us. And that's a lot of what we think about. And then we dehumanize each other. I'm going to get some, you know, I'd give him some, you know, she'd get some, he'd get some. I am some. I'm not an individual. I'm just a representation of a sexual act or a sexual body part. And again, this is all neurolinguistic programming by the New World Order through their control of our culture creation industries. But there are great things happening, and there are individuals doing the best they can within these. And I've got nothing personal against Ms. Allison Lee or anybody else who's adopted different belief systems. The question is, and I brought this up before in the show, are you serious about what you're into or not? Like, if you're a serious activist, no problem. And you seriously want to make sure that that the people who you are representing and people in general have better lives and a better future, that they can be more free, but they can be less propagandized, and they can be less attacked with the various New World Order attacks on their health, wealth, and relationships. If you are in any way serious about what you say, if you're serious about saying you care and you're a feminist or a liberal or a conservative or whatever, it may be time to learn about the New World Order. And I posit that theory on a regular basis here on this show. So I'm at the pinkcross.org right now, which is a site run by a former porn star, Shelley Lubin. It's called thepinkcross.org. They're a Christian site, but they're not all Christian. There's a lot of policy stuff on here. And an example of that is the latest blog entry, the California Occupational Safety and Health Cal OSHA Standards Board votes unanimously to protect adult film workers, by Jan Meza Merritt, former porn actress and member of Pink Cross. And it says here, advisory panel will consider... Oh, read more. Well, okay, I have to read more here. So this is the site here. You can check this out on your own at thepinkcross.org. The adult film industry set itself up for failure by fallaciously recalling the events that transpired during Cal OSHA's March 18th council meeting to amend state health statutes in order to better protect adult film workers. Not only did the council vote 100% in favor of the amendment, but one of the councilmen stated that upon walking the door, he was against it. But when he heard testimony from Shelley Lubin, former porn actress and executive director of Pink Cross Foundation, Madeline Hernandez, former porn actress, myself, also a former porn actress, David Pounder, producer, director, performer, and president of Dave Pounder Productions, Robert, God, the names, Robert Kim Farley, MD, MPH, Director of Communicable Disease Control and Prevention Program, Los Angeles County Department of Public Health, and finally, Darren James, former porn actor who contracted HIV in the 2004 HIV outbreak in the porn industry. He decided to vote for the amendment. So, again, this is a good use of someone's position of power. It's like, okay, so I've got to vote on this. You know, what am I going to say? You know, what am I going to review, you know, before I vote on this? And it's important to figure that out here. So for everybody out there, you know, with all the big memes being promoted in our society, sex, violence, I saw a giant God of War poster, near King and Spadina, just walking a little bit south, southeast of there, filming some chemtrails last Monday, which are all up on my YouTube site, youtube.com/blackchristianverse. And I'm happy to report, after 5 weeks in a row of filming them spraying chemtrails and then posting up 25 videos of Mondays, they've been few and far between here in Toronto. So you can look for the videos called Toronto Chemtrails versus Toronto Patio Season Round 5 to get an idea that we may have an idea of what's going on some level here in the city. And Maybe the New World Order doesn't think they can get away with this particular attack, though, of course, they will continue their others unless we step up and stop them. You know, on that note, I'd like to flip to another example of our dehumanization here. And that is a recent experiment by Alex Jones. And Alex Jones recently... conducted a mass social experiment to see where our humanity was. And a lot of us are getting more selfish and more insecure. And the more insecure we get, the more we got to do selfish things to perpetuate any sort of happiness. And so, you know, it's a vicious, vicious cycle. And we got to keep in mind, you know, what's going on here. And so we've got to make sure that we still know how to care about other people in this culture, not just think of ourselves, not just think of what's in it for me, not just think I'm going to vote based on what's in it for me. Because if you vote based on just what you get, then you get people in there who are of questionable character. Because they could make you an individual promise, and who the hell knows if they'll keep it. But if the individuals that you choose to vote for do talk about doing something for someone besides yourself and say, yeah, you know what, I think I want to take care of, you know, maybe take crack at the whole homelessness thing in this first world city here, or perhaps child poverty. Should we really have children that are poor in this city? You know, you can say, well, I just wanted a break on my property taxes. But if that's all you go for, then you may get a candidate that just does that and then doesn't do much else, and then doesn't even do that for you because they aren't of the moral character you need for someone to serve in a higher office of authority over your tax dollars. But back to the experiment here. iPad tortured to death in mass social experiment. Alex Jones, and this is by Aaron Dykes and Alex Jones from the 15th of April. Alex Jones undertakes a psychological experiment that proves dangerous in more than one sense. While the public is caught up in the hype of promotion of the new iPad, it's clear once again that technology has captured our humanity. Our worth has been caught up in baubles, and we are dangerously close to caring about our gadgets more than our family and neighbors. And so there is a link here to the story, and then there's a link to some comments about the story here. Kill puppies and children, but God forbid, don't hurt the iPad. And it's talking about some of the reactions of people, who said, I honestly don't care if America tortures a few terrorists. It might not be fair, but it's not fair when they hijack planes and use suicide bombers either. Again, another great reason to figure out that 9/11 was an inside job so we can stop ourselves from being, you know, turned into this. And the iPad, the new Apple product, was tortured because Alex Jones and the InfoWars team wanted to find out, and they didn't tell people at the beginning why they were doing this, just told them at the end of the video, how people would feel about a technological device being tortured when we don't care that much about people being tortured. We know they're torturing people off a military base at Guantanamo right now, and so on. So how would we feel about that? And there's also an incident in Iraq a couple of years ago of a Marine throwing a puppy off a cliff, and the puppy going yep 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 yep, and then falling to its death 150 feet away. And there was a lot of reaction to that video by people, but more so to the puppy than there has been to human beings in general being tortured. And that's because years of films of dehumanization, years of scenes of violence, people getting killed, video games showing hundreds of people killed, shows like CSI and Dexter that show autopsies on a regular basis, bodies being cut open to solve crimes. You know, all this stuff has an effect on our brain, and we can start to see what that effect is if we pay attention. So go check out InfoWars.com for a bit more on the iPad being tortured experiment and the reactions to that, and see what your own reactions are. And if you find a sense of revulsion building over this inanimate piece of technology being tortured, then you can realize, you know, some of the programming that's in all of us, you know, after several hundred years and generations of control by different oligarchs who basically all do the same thing. As Webster Tarpley says, oligarchs are like plants. They just do what they do. And one of the things they do is they try and restrict health solutions for us. And that's the reason that there's tons of reasons that hemp is illegal. And they're all bad for the masses, and they're all good for monopoly capitalists. So back to Rick Simpson from Run from the Cure, good Nova Scotian, now currently on Exile from Canada on hemp.
In April 2003, I contacted the Pain Management Center in Halifax. I had been told by a friend that the center might be able to provide me with a license to possess hemp. All I got was a recorded message stating that there was a 21-month waiting period and that you must be referred by your physician. Now, where did that leave me? My family doctor wouldn't even talk about hemp medicine.
Time controversy brewing in a small town over this. Is it a cure-all or contraband?
Now, here's somebody dying from cancer. They're not dying anymore. Here's somebody that has something else. Well, they're cured. And this is what's doing it.
But in a small Nova Scotia town, one man is trying to get the word out about what he says are the healing properties of hemp oil. As Ross Lord explains, where he's spreading the word has created a major headache with no cure in sight.
In McCann, Nova Scotia, this oil is gaining a reputation as a miracle drug.
That's a cure right there.
Oil extracted from marijuana plants. Rick Simpson has been making it and giving it to friends and neighbors. He calls it hemp oil. Others know it as weed oil. In small doses, he says, it makes you well without getting you high.
It may not mean nothing to y'all, but understand nothing was done for me. So I don't plan on stopping at all. I want this shit forever, mine, ever mine.
And that was some of the global television and CBC mainstream news reports on Rick Simpson. You can see the film Run from the Cure online. Definitely support Rick Simpson here on 420, April 20th, 2010. Happy 420, everybody. Hemp is great for making plastic, plastic that doesn't break and that does biodegrade. Hemp is great for making clothes. The Nina Pinta and Santa Maria sales to help colonize this land were made of hemp. The original documents, the Bill of Rights and Constitution were written on hemp. And hemp is among the healthiest ways to boost your immune system in the world. So if we were to decriminalize the use of hemp and make some of that hemp paste that Rick Simpson made, we'd all be a lot happier and healthier. Helps keep your weight down. Amazing stuff. So there are some marijuana advocacy groups in Toronto. Definitely work with them to make sure that people can not only buy hemp to smoke medicinally, but can also buy hemp to process and ingest medicinally, as Rick Simpson was doing in Run from the Cure. But I'm out of here, folks. A quick check of the mainstream news reveals TDC complains a culture of disdain, so watch Scrapping with the TDC, a bad idea. Don Martin, after H1N1, preparing possibly for the big one. The National Post prepping us for a new VAC attack or plague attack. The Sun with some Dancing with the Stars silliness. The Globe and Mail with whoops of joy as some flights resume over Europe. Giant volcanic ash going on over there. Definitely going to get into that in more detail later, but there's a bunch of theories out there about HAARP technology and so on. In an era where we blame global warming and atmospheric phenomena, where we can take that and we can blame a volcano on it, which some people are wont to do, which is a phenomena of the Earth's crust shifting. You can see that in an era of disasters and crises and governments and the media scaring the crap out of us on a regular basis. We've got to look for the truth. Before Mr. Colin Smith comes on with your 4 hours of One Flight Up, I'd like to shout out a few good websites where you can do that. One is Infowars.com. Check out the latest. They are demonizing people like myself, people who are questioning the government, the members of the Tea Parties, truthers, and everybody else. Listen to what we're saying before you decide to form an opinion about us. That's a negative one, and that's a dangerous and hateful one, if you don't mind. So Infowars.com for more on that. Naturalnews.com, excellent health news. Internationalforecaster.com, TrendsResearch.com for great wealth news. VigilantCitizen.com, latest article deconstructing the black eyed peas. I'm going to be rocking that body, linking it to the transhumanist agenda and occult symbolism. Fascinating stuff. VigilantCitizen.com. ConspiracyCulture.com. Today are the screenings of American Drug War and How Weed Won the West at 400 Roncesvalles, the Review Cinema. Go to ConspiracyCulture.com for more details. Locally as well, PressForTruth.ca, TheFreedomLink.org, Toronto Street Newspaper, On the Streets, TorontoTruthSeekers.com. We'll be there this Saturday, growing fast. 338 members now as we're upticking towards 1,000, hopefully before the G20 Summit. New flyers, new tactics, and new information. Check out TorontoTruthSeekers.com. But that's enough for me, folks. Here on 420, I do wish everybody a great day. Mr. Colin Smith is up next with One Flight Up. I leave you with Forever. Because when it comes to freedom, we should want that ish forever, and we should figure out how to get it. And if music can help inspire you to do that, like it helps inspire me, by all means, go for it.
But what shall I scream for? This is my theme park. My mind shines even when my thoughts sing dark. Pistol on my side, you don't wanna hear that thing talk. Let the king talk, check the price and pay attention. Lil Wayne, that's what they gotta say to mention. I'm like Nevada in the middle of the summer. I'm resting in the lead, I need a pillow and a cover. My foot sleeping on the gas. No brake pads, no such thing as last. May not mean nothing to y'all. Understand nothing was done for me. So I don't care.